We'll get started with our questions, and then we'll just kind of ask some things. Okay. And so I guess you'll tell a little bit about yourself, maybe, who you are.
Well, so I'm obviously Kiki Cunningham, born and raised here, Brother Ricky's daughter, this guy's sister. I do want to just say this, though, real quick. Yeah, Salisa's daughter. That's.
I kind of thought you got left out.
But. I feel like that's pretty obvious. So I've started working. I work in the ER at Murray now, and I literally, you know, at least 100 times a day, I walk into a patient's room. I have no idea who they are, and they say, "You have to be Salisa's daughter." I say, "Yes, I am." So again, that one's kind of a given. But a few, I don't think I've told you this story. A few weeks ago, we were out to dinner and Mom was there, so she can verify this story. And somebody asked, they thought I was Corey's daughter.
There you go.
And I keep forgetting to tell it, and this is the perfect time to bring that story
I like that.
Out.
So, you know, one of us looks really old.
So
that's
Corey's,
what you're saying.
Corey's daughter also.
Yeah, I like that.
No, but again, I'm a nurse. I don't know. I think we'll.
That's absolutely. So the first question, it's not one that we prepared.
Oh gosh.
So yeah. So what I want to know, I think a lot of us, when we think about what God has for us right now, mm-hmm. we neglect sort of maybe all of the roads that it took to get there.
Amen.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I remember when I was a kid, I was very accident prone. I got hurt all the time, whether it was four-wheeler wrecks, motorcycle wrecks, mm-hmm. whatever it was. And every time I would get injured, mm-hmm. your response was to run as far away as you could. So, like, if I got hurt, your instinct is run away from whatever's happening.
Yes.
Then somehow you went from, like, run away from anybody who's in pain to I'm going to be a nurse.
Yes.
So I want to hear the story of how we know that God used your nursing in a big way that we're going to talk about a lot. But how do you feel like God even brought you to nursing?
And again, completely, I don't have a great answer for this. Obviously, you guys knew I grew up playing basketball, and that was kind of my life for a long time. And then I got to Murray State, and that's really all I had thought about was basketball and sports. And I get to Murray State, that career kind of was over, and it's like, what do I do? And so I literally, I think, tried like 7 different majors at Murray State. And I am not exaggerating. Like, I did a little bit of everything. My first roommates at college, one of my best friends was a nursing major. And I remember literally saying, of all the things I could do, that's the one thing I will never do. Like, she just lived in the library. Like, I was like, never, ever, ever. And then again, after I'd kind of tried everything at Murray State, it was like, my parents and everybody's like, okay, you've got to do something. And so it was a good job. You know, you're going to have job security. It was a good job for a woman. That was literally kind of my thought process. I had to do something. So I just kind of jumped into it for that reason. It was just kind of, I didn't have any other options. And then, again, I hated every second of nursing school. It was bad. And then the second I literally stepped out as a nurse onto the floor for the first night, I could not dream of doing anything else. Like, I absolutely love it, and it's just been one of the biggest blessings. So again, complete God thing. He had a plan, and he got me where he wanted me. It was not anything I did. I tried really hard to do everything else.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so with nursing, you went a lot of different places.
Yes.
You were at Murray, you were mm-hmm. in Paducah, and then eventually wound up in Cincinnati, and then now you're in Malawi.
Yeah.
So obviously the move, you kind of worked your way up, I know, into like the corporate mm-hmm. side of things, and that's what took you to Cincinnati. But then you go from Cincinnati to Malawi. So Paducah to Cincinnati, all that kind of makes sense. But explain to us how you got from Cincinnati to Malawi, Africa.
That's not a natural progression, like Cincinnati. No, and so to answer that question, I really have to start, like, go way back. So when I was in high school, again, became a believer when I was younger, you know, sold out, had an, you know, was a member of the youth group, just on fire. And I really felt in high school, God calling me to missions. So I remember, you know, talking to your youth pastor and family and, you know, I'm going to be a missionary. And then, obviously, Satan is not a cheerleader and is just going to allow God to just work in your life. So threw some things at me that kind of rocked me. And instead of keeping my eyes on him, started to put my eyes on me and woe is me and just kind of kind of got derailed for a little while. And then, and when I say a little while, probably about a span of about 15 years has been very all about me. I, again, was wrapped in my career, which again, in itself was not a bad thing. A nursing was an awesome career. I've had so many blessings and a really good story through that. I feel like God has really blessed my nursing career. But again, it was all about me. I was going to be successful. I loved people telling me I was great at what I did. I got a lot of significance from that. I also was all about hobbies. I, you know, when basketball didn't go through, I tried to become a professional golfer. I've tried to become a professional wakeboarder. Like, none of that worked out for me, but I gave it a good go, okay? But again, just all about me. I mean, they can tell you I did what I wanted to do. I spent my money on what I wanted to do. Just very all about me. And I think a lot of times in life, to kind of wake you up, God sometimes has to break you or make something horrific happen, you know, to just kind of discipline you and wake you up. In my case, it was the opposite. He gave me everything I wanted. I did. I climbed the ladder. I had made it to Cincinnati. I was in this place where I just thought I was going to take over Mercy Health and all this good stuff. And then I'm in this place, you know, got everything I thought I'd wanted. And it was just, God just really through that showed me that, wow, this is super empty, super unfulfilling, super unsatisfying. And through that, you know, just was like, okay, you win. Like, I give up. I've done it my way and it doesn't work. So at that point, I got into a good church. I got plugged in and started getting back in the Word. I started reading books, listening to podcasts, just, I'd be on my bicycle listening to sermons. I mean, just, you know, just radically different. And through all that, God just changed my heart and the call to missions started to come back. So I, as a Southern Baptist, you start the IMB application. So I kind of did that. I enrolled in Southern and, you know, started all that process. And during that, it was a Thanksgiving weekend, I think. I was home and I'm, you know, visiting for the weekend. I'm sitting like right there. And Josh Hutchins, the president of Gospel Life, happened to be doing his presentation on Africa. And I kind of knew they were going and a little bit about it, but that was kind of the extent. So I'm sitting there and he's talking and I'm just bawling, like the whole service. I mean, it was an audible, not audible, but I mean, it was as clear as anything I've ever felt that that's where God wanted me. So I kind of made some contact with him and a few months later, I had quit my job, sold everything I had, and moved home and was headed to Africa. So there you go.
Yeah. You gave a lot of your possessions to us, too. So.
Yeah, if you...
worked out for us.
That is very valid.
Yes.
I'm always afraid she's going to come
TV.
And take them
Thank
back.
You.
Yeah. Yes. Every time I walk in their house, I'm like, sheesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long did you go to Malawi? Like what?
So I was there.
Time
so,
frame.
So when I first, you know, started feeling the call, not last year, but the year before, I went over for 2 weeks, just kind of a survey trip. Again, everything was already in the process. It wasn't like I was going to answer questions whether I was going. It was just kind of a, what have I gotten myself into kind of a trip. So I went for 2 weeks, and then when I moved back home, you know, started to get everything ready. And then I left last March, the end of March, and I was there until the beginning of October. So however many months that was, 5 or 6.
Okay. So most of us haven't been to Malawi. So kind of paint the picture of what's Malawi like? Mm-hmm. What are the people like? What's the culture like? Anything,
yeah.
If you could paint a picture for us,
yeah.
Take us there for a little bit.
So this is where I'm going to lose all my street cred as a missionary because Malawi's phenomenal. Like it's just one of the most amazing places I've ever been. I'm very outdoorsy. I like to do all that stuff. It's just gorgeous. I mean, God just rocked it with Malawi. So it's beautiful. The people are amazing. I mean, they are the sweetest, most genuine, kind-hearted. I rode my bike all over the place by myself, and I never once felt any kind of a threat or any kind of, you know, everywhere you go, people are waving at you. They're wanting to talk to you. They're taking your picture. I mean, they're just a very warm, it's called the warm heart of Africa, and it literally lives up to its name. I mean, it's just, the people are amazing. I miss them every day. as far as culture, it's Africa. When I'm there, it's kind of the winter season. So the majority of time that I'm there, it's like 70 degrees in the day. And then at night, it's, you know, 50s, 40s. So it's amazing. The weather's perfect. Now over there, it's really hot. Or it has kind of just got over being hot. But the weather's great. Obviously, it's you know, a third world country, so it's not your same luxuries that you have here. I have a house that was built that's great. It's super cute, but it's not frilly. I don't have electricity all of the time. We have electricity, but depending on how the water we get, it's hydro-powered, so depending on like water levels, we may not have electricity. There's sometimes like a cycle where for 6 hours of the day, I don't have electric, and we get that schedule in advance, but that means no hot water. I've taken lots. When I first moved over, I didn't have electricity for like 2 months when I lived there, because that's the other thing. Things just take forever. Like, we take for granted, you move into a new house and you call the electric company and they flip the lights on or however that works. It took them 2 months. Everything was in and done, but just we would have to go every day and talk to them. And I mean, it was crazy. So for 2 months, I didn't have electricity. So at night, I'm in the dark with my cell phone. And I had no hot water, so I'm taking cold showers. And if anybody knows me, that was like hashtag suffering. Like, I do not do cold at all. So that was rough. You know, we can't drink the water. You know, you can't just eat any kind of food that you want. We mostly just eat what we have. As far as, like, there's three major cities. There's a city called Blantyre, Zomba, and then Lilongwe. We live in Zomba, and we like to we kind of, me and Josh and Lee joke about how it's like the Lexington, Louisville, and Murray of Malawi. So Zomba is kind of like the Murray. Blantyre is Louisville, and that's like 45 minutes away. So that's where we do all of our shopping, and we get our groceries and everything. And they have some cool cafes and things. There are parts of Blantyre where you don't feel so out of, you know, culture. Like, it kind of feels somewhat like here. Somewhat. And then again, Blantyre or Zomba, our little town, small town, it's quaint, it's super cute. And then Lilongwe is the capital city, and it's kind of our Lexington, we call it. But, you know, the infrastructure, there's kind of a couple main roads that are paved. Everything else is dirt roads. Outside of those cities, it's a lot of, we call villages, which is basically like country. You know, if you think, you know, Murray and then Benton, and then you've got all the houses in between. That's kind of what it is, except for it's just dirt roads, people walking, bicycles, no electricity, no running water, little huts kind of everywhere. I'm trying to think.
Language?
What's
language?
Yeah, so they speak Chichewa. No, I don't know it. I had some big hopes on learning, and I still do. I mean, I do want to. It's nothing like you've ever heard. You know, when you hear Spanish or French, we can kind of pick out some things. Chichewa is like, I mean, I can't even pick out anything. So that's what they speak. But because Zomba was used to be controlled by Britain, English is the main language. So your educated people, the kids that are in college, in your big cities, most people speak English. So that's also a thing that kind of takes away the motivation to learn it, because I can get around with English. The only time that they don't speak it is when we're out in clinics in the villages, and I have translators, and all that's going so fast, I don't really have a lot of time to talk anyway. So that's kind of where, but like all of our road signs, everything's in English. Coming in and out of the airports, everything is in English, so it's very easy to get around knowing English. We do drive on the opposite side of the road. That was kind of fun. So, yeah.
What do you think? You mentioned some things like electricity, but for you personally, what's been the hardest for like most, like the biggest sacrifice besides
Diet Coke?
Obviously missing us. Yeah.
Really? I mean, I kid about Diet Coke, but if you guys know me also, like, I don't cook. Like, I drive through windows and all of that. And, you know, that's not there. So we have to do all of our cooking. And so that was kind of a wake up. Obviously, you missing your family is the biggest. I'm very thankful that I'm a missionary in this day and age. You know, back in the day, like, I just have so much more of appreciation for the people that laid the foundation and the gospel and would go off and their family wouldn't hear for them maybe ever, or sending letters or not knowing. I mean, we've got my Wi-Fi in my house is better than my Wi-Fi in Dexter. Like, so, I mean, we FaceTime, we've got all the stuff, WhatsApp, we text constantly. So that keeps you very connected. And it's really hard. My personality was just, which is another just awesome thing about God. He's just called me to a life that I'm suited for. Some people may struggle with what I would be doing, but for me, it's just like, I love it. It's right up my alley. So it's hard to say that any other than really you guys and, you know, my little guys and those kind of things, it hasn't been a huge struggle. But yeah, Diet Coke. Final answer.
So what's like the main, like in Malawi, what's like the main thing that you do there? Like what's kind of the mission? Yeah. Give us some context of what you're actually doing there.
So I am, my title is the director of something, some kind of compassion ministry side. So Gospel Life has a couple different arms. So Josh is there. If you guys don't know Josh, he's one of the smartest people I know. He's just, he's got his PhD and he's amazing. And he's there teaching pastors and he started a school. So that's kind of his arm. I'm the medicine arm. So it was already set up. We're kind of taking over a ministry that was started by a couple or that had kind of progressed it. And I'm, again, I just want to, huge, Eric and Stephanie Chapman, we're kind of taking over for them. They're kind of like pioneer missionaries. They go and set things up. And I'm taking over an amazing infrastructure that they set. So I just, you know, very thankful for what they've done and the work that they put in. But so we have churches all over Malawi in the area that we're in, kind of southern Malawi. And I can't think of the number of churches. I mean, it's like 100 and, Steph, do you know, 170. So we have 170 churches that were planted by this couple and some other people before us. And to minister to our churches and the villages, we run mobile clinics to the areas. So just to kind of give you a little backup. So obviously in America, you know, on your way to Murray, you pass doctor's offices and urgent care clinics and hospitals. And, you know, if something happens, we're good. You know, like there's easily, we have vehicles, we can easily get to where we need to go. We call an ambulance and we're taken care of. It's not the case there. You know, they have hospitals in their main cities. Again, it's different than our hospitals, but they do have hospitals. But in the villages where the people live, very rural, they don't have any medical care. Sometimes there might be a clinic, but oftentimes there's no doctor there or there's no medicine. So the doctor may tell you what's wrong with you, but they can't treat it. So it's kind of pointless in a way. So you've just got a lot of people out there that don't have medical care. So what we do is I've got a team. I've got two Malawi native doctors that work for us. And then I've got another few guys, Malawi guys, on my team. We load up. We have a Toyota Land Cruiser. It's really awesome. It's one of my favorite parts of the job, my ride. But we load up in the morning, medical supplies, medicine, and we drive for hour and a half out into the village. And we've set up a schedule. So because the clinics are in conjunction with our churches, we set the schedule and they know when we're coming. So there's about 25 villages that we minister to and we hit them 3 times a year. So we make the schedule, they know when we're coming, we get them to the pastors, and then we drive on the day that we're supposed to be wherever, and you there's nothing, you know, you'll be driving, there's just dirt roads, and then all of a sudden in the distance, you just see this mass of people gathered. They're all sitting, they've been waiting since dawn, and they know we're coming and we have medicine, and there could be anywhere from, you know, a light day, like a little small area could be, you know, 200 people, and a huge day could be 500 that we see in one day. If you're not medical, like that's crazy. You know, a lot of doctors see 50 people a day, and we see like 500. So again, So we treat a lot of different things. You know, we see your chronic things, hypertension, diabetes, those kind of things. You see just, you know, infections, a lot of skin diseases, a lot of skin things. Hygiene's a big issue. Malaria is kind of one of the biggies that affects them. And so we've got all that kind of medicine. So basically, you know, we just, that's my main job is to run the medical clinics. We, in between clinic rounds, we get like all of our medicine. There's a pharmacy in Blantyre that we get all of our medicine in. So we get it in bulk. It comes in just big jars. And there's a lot of time that we have to spend counting it out because we'll like go ahead and count the dosage and have it ready. So that day we're just, you know, it's already, it's kind of like when you go to get a prescription filled and it's in the bottle, we put it in the bottle before we go out. So there's a lot of work on the front end to kind of get ready for the clinics. But basically, you know, we just take medicine out to villages, to people that don't have any. And you know, there's a lot of days that, you know, you may not see people that are super, super sick and they might survive without us. And then you may see days where if we didn't come there, I don't know if they would have made it many more days. So it's just kind of a, you know, that kind of thing. We also in the clinics do, we've added eyeglasses. So we've kind of, we're introduced to a company that, has found a way to test for vision, and we can make glasses out in the clinic. So we've added that. I'm also hoping to next year add dental. That's a big problem that we see a lot of times. You know, it won't be crazy dental work, but you know, just pulling teeth and those kind of things, because that's a big, you know, issue. Yeah, I mean, if you've ever had a toothache, that's, you know, very, very difficult, and they don't have any way to, you know, get that. So, so yeah, that's my main job. I'm the medicine lady.
Okay, so, gosh, you answered a lot of things with that one.
You may go to changes that I've made.
Yeah, You said the structure was already there, Right. Already established, mm-hmm. but now, obviously, with somebody else taking over, what kind of changes have you implemented?
Yeah, so, again, mad shout out to who established what we're doing, but they were not, and I think this even goes to even more props to what they did. They weren't medical. Like these people that made the clinics, you know, did this, and none of them had any medical background. So really, really cool the infrastructure that they set. But at the same time, you know, as a medical person, I've kind of came in and saw some things that we could do differently. One of the main things that we changed, so. You know, when you go to the hospital, you type in your name and they can pull up all your medical records and they know everything you've done since, you know, birth. They don't have that. A lot of people, you know, if you had them write their name the next day that you went and they wrote their name again, it would be spelled different. Like they don't know how to spell their name. They don't know their birthday. So there's no way to keep records on our end of anything like that we could keep. So what we did was we got these health records that we give them and they keep them. And so we write down the treatment, the diagnosis, what we did today, and then we give it to them, and then when they come back, they bring it back to us. So we've kind of started a way to keep records. So, you know, the guy that his blood pressure last time was whatever over whatever, we can see if we gave him medicine, is it helped, is it better, is it worse, you know, and even like if we start to see people that, you know, chronically, you know, the last three times we saw him, his blood pressure was high. Well, maybe we need to increase the amount we give him. And so, again, I just think the continuity of care that we're going to start, because, you know, being in the same villages, we see a lot of the same people. And that was one thing I wasn't expecting. Like, you really, like, by the end of the last round that we did before I left, like, I knew a lot of people. Like, they look familiar, and they would come up. And so that's really cool. I can't imagine in 5 years, like, just the relationships of people that I'll know out in the villages. So, again, the health books were a big thing. Another thing that, you know, I think, and again, this isn't just Malawi culture. It's our culture, too. But we are very eager to give out antibiotics. And they are really, really eager to give out antibiotics. Even without, you know, any kind of diagnostic, you know, no white count, no temperature, but if they say their stomach's hurting, we're going to give them amoxicillin. So I'm really trying to change that mindset with our doctors and not you know, instead of doing more treatment things, try to be more preventative. And the people that aren't really sick and don't need medicine, do more vitamins. We added soap. We got a good, really good antimicrobacterial soap that we give out to kids and those kind of things. So toothbrushes, toothpaste, things, because they want something. If they're going to come and sit, they want something. And so I want to give them something, but let's give them something that's helpful rather than just a pill that's not going to be helpful and really not going to help them at all. One thing, you know, because we treat so many people in such a short amount of time, it's very quick. There's sometimes not a lot of assessments and diagnostic things. So they were just kind of walking through the line and we were giving them things. And so I've kind of put in place where, I mean, we're doing vital signs, we're triaging. We are, you know, you don't just get malaria medicine, we test for it. We've got, you know, other little things like that. So just a few little things that I think have made a big difference. Again, we still have a long way to go, but I'm excited about the path that we're kind of on.
That's awesome. So we got a question from the audience.
For the peanut gallery?
Yes.
All right.
So you've talked a lot about medicine. Where does that actually come from? Like, is there somebody supplying that for you? Is that, you know, is that something our church can help with?
Yeah, no,
that's kind of a question.
That's a good question. I like that question. Thank you, whoever did that one. So like I said, we buy our medicine in Blantyre. Like, I don't bring supplies with me. I'm not saying there's not any kind of supplies that, you know, if you guys have that wouldn't be helpful, but we like to support the local economy. You know, it's good when we can give them money and, you know, help support businesses, local businesses. So we get the medicine there, but as far as money, that's all donated. Obviously, you know, Gospel Life, we are funded and supported by Hardin. We're an arm of Hardin Baptist, but a lot of our, you know, funds are just, you know, donations. It costs about... and I should have this figure a little bit better. For like $30 or $40 a week, not a week, I'm sorry, a month, you could sponsor a whole clinic day. That's paying the doctors, paying for all the medicine, all the gas, paying my staff, all of that. So for like $40 a month, you could like furnish, or you could support one clinic day. Again, you can, Gospel Life has a website. You can also go through Hardin, you know, and do Gospel Life, you know, Kiki's Medical Fund or whatever. But yeah. And again, if you want to talk more about that, you know, let me know, because again, it's, and I also, I haven't said this, and this is the main thing that we do. So every clinic day before we start, there's a gospel presentation. The medicine brings them, but while we've got them there, obviously physical need is urgent and it's real and it's not, you know, Jesus was all about healing, and I think physical needs are a big deal, and that's such a good way that we can show Christ's love and that kind of thing. But at the same time, that's not going to save anybody, and their main need is spiritual. So we have a pastor that's on our team, and he preaches the gospel every morning. Even once the clinic goes on, he sits around, and if people have questions or want to talk about salvation or need counseling, he's there to whatever. So, again, love the medicine side. The gospel is the main thing. We had several come to Christ last year, several testimonies of people's lives that were changed that would come up to us in different rounds and said, hey, last time I got saved, and this is what my life looks now versus what it did. So super cool things.
Okay, so what can Americans learn from Malawi?
So I joke with mom all the time that I'm so ready to go back to Africa so I can have a break because America's crazy, y'all. Even good things, we're just super, super busy. You know, even on my day off, even if it's like going to meet somebody for lunch or going to a basketball game or kids practice or whatever, it's busy. And we don't realize how busy we are. You know, again, not all bad things, but it's just we run and run and run and run. And a lot of times we're running and running and running for things and things that ultimately don't necessarily matter. In Africa, it's just a very chill, very easy, laid back. My hardest day is not anything compared to my hardest day here. And, you know, you see they have nothing. I mean, these are the poorest people, one of the poorest countries on the planet. They don't have anything, and they still have a joy and a peace, and they enjoy their days, and they're, it's not all about things. And I know that that's cliche, but we in America get really wrapped up, and I think we spend a lot of time and money and energy on things that ultimately someday when it's all said and done isn't going to matter. So that would just kind of be my, you know, all good things. You know, I'm not saying that it's not good to be involved and be busy, and I love to work, and sometimes I struggle over there with the lack of things to do. But at the same time, you know, I think we spin our wheels on a lot of things that aren't really important at the end of the day.
Yeah. So let's do one last question from here, and then we've got, we'll kind of do a lightning round.
Ooh,
we've got several
questions
coming in. So keep them coming. We'll spend the last 15 minutes on like lightning round questions.
Okay.
So you mentioned about changes that you've made, like kind of this year and things you've seen. So what do you see like the future of like the compassion side of Malawi?
Yeah.
Like what are your dreams? What do you think maybe this year, 5 years?
Yeah, that's good. So one of the big things that I want to change that we're kind of in the process of changing. So right now, like I said, we go to every village 3 times a year. And right now that looks like we're there in March. I'm about to leave in April, and we start at the end of April. So all of May I'm doing clinics. All of July I'm doing clinics. And all of September I'm doing clinics. So in about, you know, 5 months there, they're getting hit with a doctor 3 times. And then from the end of September all the way back around to April, they don't see anybody. And again, we were kind of told, you know, there's the rainy season, and that's very true. But now that Josh and Lee have been there for kind of around the clock, you know, the rainy season isn't as life shutting down as we could kind of thought it was. So I'm hoping to spread the clinics out. Like I would like to kind of maybe go back March-ish, end of March, then kind of do that middle of the year and then do a November. So it's spread out where they don't have to go that 7 months without seeing anybody. And, you know, by the second and third round, like they just saw us. Like there's the need for us isn't really there. So I'm really excited about that. I think that'll be huge. I talked about dental. We had also, you know, we've gotten, you know, just as I'm working here and connected here also, which is one of the beauties of kind of the way that God's led me to do that is I'm not just over there for good, but he's, you know, and I've prayed about this and really feel like he's calling me to both places. But in that, I really feel like, you know, I can help, you know, get interns over there. I would really like to have more of a connection with the college kids. And, you know, when I go, they go with me. And then when I come back, they come back with me. And just more of an internship thing. The one last thing before the lightning round, I think one of the other huge needs is just, or one of the differences in Africa and here, in Africa, they don't have any opportunity to change their situation. And again, I know there's a case for where you're born and those play a factor. But at the end of the day, if you were, wherever you're born in America, if you really wanted to change your life, you can do it. You have the opportunity. We have financial aid. We have opportunities. There's none there. And I would like to, you know, we've already kind of started to sponsor some people and like, you know, maybe do some kind of program where we offer nursing scholarships, have students apply, Malawian, you know, people, and then have them apply and then, you know, us like support them, get them through nursing school. And then, you know, in return, they work in the clinics. So it's not like we're just doing it for free, but, you know, they kind of are investing back in us. But I just think, you know, giving somebody an opportunity to change their situation could just be huge. And like I said, I'm already sponsoring a girl and it's just been awesome to watch her, you know, wouldn't be doing anything. She would just, you know, be continuing the path that you have kids and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that, but you know, you just continue the cycle that they live in and, you know, to give somebody the opportunity to change that, I just think would be really cool. So,
well, I've got one more question, okay, because we haven't touched on this, but I know, and you're talking about women, this lady you sponsor and those kind of things, you, and we have our Rooted Women's Ministry in here tonight, you are doing some things, yes, with the women over there as far as discipleship, Bible study. So what does that look like, and what do you hope, yeah, to see with that as well?
Yeah, so that's, I love what I do over there clinic-wise, but this is probably my favorite thing that I do. So when I went over there, you know, we've got, the pastors are being trained, and we've got Bible school for kids, and we've got some other programs for youth and whatnot, and the women just kind of didn't have anything going on. And so really started to know some women and just kind of get a heart for women's ministry. And so they're big about their choir. They are all about the choir, okay? And I know you've kind of heard the story, but so every church, their women get together once a week and have a choir practice to get ready for Sunday, okay? They prepare all their dances and whatnot. So I was like, they're already meeting, you know, they're already coming. So I just kind of jumped in on their meetings and threw in a Bible study. Didn't really ask a whole lot, but just kind of came in. And so I started a Bible study in my church, and then, which kind of spread to, I've got like four on my off days.
And you're a member of the choir, right?
And I'm also a member of the choir, you know.
Backup dancer.
No big deal, but, you know. And then I've also kind of, it kind of morphed into, on my off days, I've got like four other villages that I hit, drive out in the Land Cruiser and lead a Bible study. And so that's been awesome. I mean, these women, again, very uneducated population. The women are the least educated of all the people. So, you know, it's a very small, you know, just you're starting at the very bottom, you know. But it's just been awesome to see kind of lights go off a little bit, you know, and people, and they're really eager and they want to know. And that's just been really awesome. So again, I would love to see that grow. You know, again, I'm not sure exactly what all that will look like, but that's been a huge blessing.
Is it translated over to you?
Yes. Yeah. So I think if we get to the slides, I'll show you my main translator guy, and he goes with me to all the villages, and he's awesome. So,
all right, we'll do a few questions. This is from Serenity. She's back there. She sent a question.
All right.
Have you handled any poisonous snake bites?
That's good.
That's a good
question. No, but I wish I had. Maybe next time I'll go back. I haven't handled anything too crazy. We had some kids that had came with accidents that we had to sew up and those kind of things, but I didn't see any poisonous snake bites or any even snakes at all. So I don't have really any exciting stories like that.
Just to clarify, you're not wishing people to get snake bit, right?
Right.
You're just saying
exactly.
If it happens,
you'll be there.
I'll be there.
You'll be there.
Right.
Gotcha. All right, next one. What is the best food in Malawi?
Ooh.
Or your favorite, I guess.
So in the villages, and we eat kind of normal because we go to the grocery and we cook our own food. So we eat kind of normal, but in the villages every day, they cook for us, and they cook rice. Their main meal is sima, which is like this porgy, it's not good. But for us, they cook rice, and then they make chicken, but it's like in a broth that's really, really good. So you like get the chicken and pour the broth over the rice, and it's has a very, very good flavor. They don't, it's like the meat is like two bites is the only bad part. The broth is really good. But again, portions are, you know, not like our portions, but.
Is there coffee?
There is coffee.
Okay.
Yeah. And I became a coffee drinker in Africa because I didn't have Diet Coke. And after a few months of like just water all the time, you want something different. So I've tried to like coffee my whole life, and over there I kind of do a little bit, but.
All right. So without electricity kind of mm-hmm. comes and goes, how do you keep your food fresh?
Yeah, that's
is
a good
that an
question.
Issue?
So Josh and Lee actually have solar. They have solar panels, so when their electricity goes out, their solar pops on. So if it goes for days without electricity, I'll take a lot of my stuff and put it in theirs. But let's be real, I don't have a whole lot in my refrigerator. I eat with them a whole lot and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
All right, you might know this one. How much does it cost to sponsor someone in Malawi to go to college?
Oh, that's good. So it's about roughly close to $2,000 a year. So it's still, you know,
this is just for like a normal college.
No, this is
or what
nursing,
Josh is doing.
Yeah. Oh, were you talking about nursing school or like I talked about?
Who wrote that one?
Leanne, was that you?
Yeah. Nursing school. Yeah, so like if
the... Let's do college and then the pastor school.
Okay, so like what I'm wanting to do with the nursing program, the who we're sponsoring right now, it's about $1,800 to $2,000 a year. We've also been helping with like books and, you know, they needed a computer and some things like that. So there's been some extra because that's the other thing we didn't really take into account. You know, she's doing clinicals right now and she has to stay other places and she can't afford rent, she can't afford gas. So when we talk about sponsorship, we also have to add in all of the other things because it's like giving you a car but not gas and not, it doesn't help. So we kind of have to do all of it. But I would say, you know, $2,500 a year would take care of. And it's like a 2-year program. And as far as Josh's school, I want to say, and you can, but I think it's like around
$30 a month.
For the...
We're getting the nod.
Yeah. So. I think that's what I've seen like on... And as far as like general school, I would assume that it would probably be comparable to the nursing school. So again, it's not cheap, but it's way cheaper than here. You know, it's still money, but it's definitely a lot cheaper than it would be for here.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. All right, so if you have people to come over and help... are extra hands actually helpful at the clinics?
That's a really good
like,
question.
Or are we just all in the way? When we
yeah, come? No, that's a really good question. So I'm hoping as we grow, I'm going to need more people. You know, like I said, we're still in the infant stages and I'm still feeling all this out and we're still growing. So as we grow, I'm hoping that, you know, I always, you know, like if helping pack pills. I know that's not fun and glamorous, but that's a big need. I mean, I could sit all day long and pack pills. But when you add a few extra hands, it goes by super fast. You know, I can, the things that we do in the clinic medically wise, it's not your top level ICU skill level nursing that you need. So a lot of things I could train anybody to do, blood pressures, temperatures, those kind of things. I also, you know, there's been teams that come over that weren't medical. And as we go out, they take the kids and do Bible schools and Bible studies. And, you know, I've even thought about, you know, if I've got people, I've got some interns coming over this summer. And while they're like kind of doing stuff, even going out and just evangelizing, you know, like while we're out there, grab a translator and go out. So I don't know if that answers that question, you know, great. So yes, I can put you to work. And I'm hoping that as we grow, there will be more need and more things to do. I'm also the kind, I'm not just going to have you come over if there isn't anything to do. So if you were interested in coming, I would make sure that we made it beneficial and those kind of things.
Okay, so what about, here's a question. Do you frequently see women for prenatal care during pregnancy?
Yeah.
There's not an ask, but I'm going to ask, have you delivered a baby?
No, man, I haven't done anything fun yet. But no, and I don't want to deliver a baby. That is snake bite, yes. Baby, no. We don't really do. There's like some prenatal clinics in Zomba. That's something that I feel a need that we can expand to, but we don't do a lot of that at present. So,
okay, back to the spiritual side of things.
Okay.
What's the biggest obstacle to the true gospel there?
Yeah, so they come from a very works-based, just like when we went to Nicaragua and even Brazil, you know, a lot of the world in those third world countries are very, they've heard of, like in Malawi, most people have heard of Jesus, but they don't have the true gospel presentation and they don't know the heart of the gospel where it's Jesus only. And so they're very work-based. You know, if you would ask them how you got to heaven, they would say, well, I'm a good guy. And, you know, that's kind of your general. And to get out of that mindset is very, very hard. Another thing, they have a lot of witch doctors that, you know, try to prey on the people and get money. And, you know, so they have a lot of that. They have a lot of, like, spiritual, like, things that they believe, you know, like demons and those kind of things. So a lot of those that's kind of hard to break down, and not that demons aren't real, but that they, you know, really like, or just just a lot of things that we have to break through and get, you know, the real gospel. And like I said, sometimes I think that's harder to change somebody like that than just if you had a clean slate, because that's just their culture and what's like embedded in their head.
All right, so we'll do one more question, and then we'll flip through your slideshow.
Yeah.
How's that sound? So you mentioned malaria quite a few times. Somebody asked, isn't malaria like the flu? Or is there a, what's the difference?
Yeah.
How can we understand malaria?
So it is. You're going to feel a lot like the flu. So malaria is carried by mosquitoes. We sleep in our house under mosquito nets in all the hotels that we go stay in. Like when I go to the Lower Shiri, which is another part of Malawi that we do clinics in, you know, we all sleep under mosquito nets. I've got nets on my windows at my house. We try to not be out after dark too much just because that's when all those the bad mosquitoes are out. But yeah, so it's mosquito bite, and the symptoms are very flu-like.
The Hutchins all have had it. Was like, I haven't been able to see in years. So that was super cool. This was from the first time. One of the first Sundays I was there, we had our first baptism at Gospel Life, and we hiked down to the river, and it was just one of the coolest experiences. I mean, you know, old-time lake baptisms are awesome, but this even beats it. I mean, we hiked, and I mean, it was just awesome. So this is where Josh teaches. This is the main room in our school.